Thank you, Ryan. Hey, look who's back in the studio, Bill.
It's the feisty columnist for your Chicago Tribune, Eric Zorin. Eric, you know what was missing from our show last week was your feistiness. Without you here to be feisty.
I know. Mary Schmeek is brilliant, but she's not that feisty.
She's not feisty, no, but she did a nice job filling in
wonderful.
For you.
People should go back and listen to that podcast episode with Mary reading her column about when you lose your father.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Very touching, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was
really
going to read my column about nose hair trimmers.
Do it. Please do it.
You got to be careful because if you remove too much hair in the winter, you breathe in the cold air and it really hurts.
See, it's my contention. I know it's not. This is not a Christmas. It doesn't feel at all like Christmas out there, but the nose hair trimmer and the ear hair trimmer is the ideal gift. It really says that you care.
Yes. Yes, it does.
And it's really just use little scissors.
It's not one of those gifts that's going to go unused. So anyway.
So true.
We'll talk about that as the holidays come around.
You actually had a very fun trip. You were telling Wendy and myself about this trip that you were on. Friends of yours from college just kind of getting back together and hanging out for a couple of days. That sounds like a good time.
Yeah, these are the three guys I lived with in college. And we've stayed in touch. And just in the last couple of years, we decided to get together again. We hadn't actually been in the same place since one guy got married, I think, in 86.
The four of us were together.
And we got together.
Just for some Kraft macaroni and cheese?
Is that what you got together for?
Yeah,
stovetop stuffing.
Right.
It's interesting how easily and quickly you just fall back into the old jokes and how, you know, we've all gone on our different paths, but none of that stuff makes any difference. You know, the foundation is there, and there's no friendships quite like that. I think it was really great. We played golf and ate good food and sat around.
Oh, that's fun.
So it's really good.
Have your lives all gone in incredibly different directions, or are there some similarities?
Well, one thing that's interesting is we're still on our first marriages, which is pretty good. I mean, we have like 120 years so far
out of the four of us.
And one guy's recently retired high school teacher. Another guy's a chairman of the history department at a university down south. Another guy's a surgeon in Danville. So
now, did they all go on to do what they thought they were going to do when you lived with them in college?
Yeah, all of them except the high school teacher, who his whole career path, he was a very bright guy, and he was going to go into physics, and he went to graduate school in physics, and he discovered partway through it that he wasn't that interested in it, and he wasn't that. He said, you know what? The people who I'm in school with, he was at Madison. The people I'm in school with are really brilliant. You know, physicists, and I'm just good at this. And he said, I think I want to teach high school. And he sent out applications all over the country to places, and he became a private high school teacher. And he really liked that. He was really, really good at it. He showed me some of the stuff he got at his retirement, which was a couple weeks ago. And the kids loved him. And it was like, it was one of the things where you sort of realize, at some point you realize, you know, I'm good at this, but if I'm going to spend my life doing something, I want to spend it doing this. And he found his calling in teaching. So everybody found their calling. So
Did you write for the school newspaper at all?
In high school, no, but in college, we're talking college. So yeah, in college I did. Yeah, that was my, in fact, I worked for the former editor of the Tribune, Ann Marie Lipinski. She was my editor at the Michigan Daily. Yeah. So
wow.
So it was pretty fun.
And that's just a coincidence?
Yeah, a total coincidence.
Because both here.
Yeah, she got an internship here at the Tribune, and then a couple years later, I got an internship here. We followed on.
So, I've heard over the years so many stories, like the one you just told, of somebody who's they think they want to be a lawyer, and they're studying, and then at some point, a light bulb goes on and says, "I don't know that I want to spend my life doing this." That's got to be a strange moment when you've geared up for something, some career for years, and then you just go.
The opposite thing happened to the other guy, which one of my other roommates, he was really into history. And he decided, about history, I can never make a living doing that. He went to law school then. He went and joined a big Chicago firm. And he and I had actually lived together in Chicago for a couple of years before we both got married. And he was working in corporate law here. And he decided, you know what? I hate this.
Really?
I love history. I hate this. He quit, went to grad school, got his PhD in history, and so it feels like, well, there was this like 8-year period where he was in law school and did this, but he got back on the right track. So there's like different paths. Of course, I've been at the same job for 36 years, so that's what makes
that's pretty rare.
That's what makes me so feisty.
I bet it does. I'm positive it does. Let's talk about what's going on the Republican side of things. You got a couple of prominent names at this point saying they're not interested in helping out Trump. You mentioned Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who is not throwing any endorsement Trump's way. But Wendy and I were talking earlier, not on air, off air, about George Will.
George Will, yes.
That one's a shocker to me.
He's leaving
the party.
Yeah,
he says,
well,
I'm done.
I get the feeling, you know, George Will, who is very, very smart, obviously. And he always uses words you got to look up. You know, it's a really bright writer and conservative guy. I think he's in this stage of his career where he doesn't really care anymore. He's just like, kind of like Obama in his presidency, like, I'm going to do what I want now.
Yeah.
He's 75, and I think he just said, you know what, heck with this. I am not putting up with this. I am not going to get in line behind Trump. I thought it was a very interesting position that he staked out. With McConnell on ABC's This Week, they were asking him, or was it Meet the Press? It was one of those chat shows, I can't remember which one now, where they're saying, you know, are you going to endorse Trump? And he said, well, that's for the American people to decide whether he's going to be the president, whether he should be a good president. I thought, wow. Here's the leader of the Senate in your own party, and he's using that line that politicians always use when they just want to duck an issue.
Right.
Well, that's for the people to decide. The voters will make that decision. I'm not going to. I was like, it was so funny to me.
I mentioned this to Bill off the air. Paul Ryan didn't say it was a weird way around saying, I'm not supporting Trump, but I support our party. And then you wonder, with all these other people coming forth, is Paul Ryan going to change his mind? Are other people going to start coming forward and saying, no, I can't?
Well, there's still this movement, and I've written about it, and a lot of people have written about it, that there is a group of delegates, I think some 400 of them for the convention, who are really trying to see if they can change the rules. And I think it's with political parties, you know, they can make their own rules. When they come to the convention, they can say, you know, oh, you can only vote if your first name begins with A through F. You know, anything. Oh, yeah, they can make whatever. It's a private organization. They're not bound by the results of these primaries necessarily. Now, I think it would be, you know, massively disruptive and to the party and divisive and everything else if they were to say, you know, the primary, yeah, Trump won more than 50% of the vote in the primaries, but we're going to give the nomination to Ted Cruz or John Kasich or someone else because we don't like Trump. But there's a real feeling that because of the positions that Trump has staked out and the positions that he's changed, that he's not a reliable Republican, that he could have kind of run as a Democrat if he had changed just a few positions. And the people say, well, we don't want to give over our party to this guy. So when they, at the run-up to the convention, they could change the rules. And the idea that they're looking for is the so-called conscience clause, which is you can vote your conscience. You're not bound any longer by the results of the primary. So they would say to the Illinois delegation, on the first ballot, you can vote. I mean, and Trump won here by, I think, you know, he won a plurality. I don't think he won a majority here. I can't remember the result. I'm like 39%.
I'm blocking it out.
But yes, I've drink to forget. And so they could just say, you know, vote for who you think would be the best party nominee right now. And this of course, would be a throwback 60, 70 years to when conventions were pretty much just that. They were the party all gathered and said, who do you think's the best guy to run?
But at this point, doesn't it become sort of suicidal almost to do something that disruptive?
Well, you can imagine. Well,
and they shouldn't do that. They shouldn't.
Wendy, the voice of reason.
Well, it's just you're saying screw you to the
question,
party.
Though, but Wendy, the question is, what does the party mean? What does it mean to be a Republican? Does Donald Trump, is he the standard bearer? Is he the guy who represents the party and its values?
No, but they shouldn't have let him get this far. It's like you can't just...
Well, isn't this a bigger question, though, about what do we let voters decide? And I think, and this gets into this whole thing with Brexit, right?
Yeah.
Where they ask these voters in England, okay, do you want to stay in the European Union or not? And they get all worked up and they vote. And then of course, Google reports that during and after the vote, everyone's Googling, like, what's the European Union? What does it mean if we leave? And they're realizing that there's all kinds of consequences for this. I think the Donald Trump vote in the primary was largely a protest vote. It's like, we don't like the way things are going on. It's a vote against business as usual. But I'm not sure that it is a vote for all of what Trump stands for and who he is. I mean, he's a bully and a blowhard, and people like that authoritarian quality in him. But I can see if I'm a Republican delegate, do I want this? Is this guy represent me? If I'm a member of this party, this is my standard bearer. Is he the guy who represents my values, my political positions? And I from a lot of Republicans, that answer is no. I talk to them all day up in the office. You know, I sit around a bunch of them, and they are bemoaning what Trump stands for and what he says.
How about this delegate from Virginia who wants to sue because he doesn't believe, despite the fact that Virginia by rights now, he has to cast a vote for Donald Trump. He wants to sue and say, I'm not doing that. I don't believe in this. I don't want to do it.
I don't see what the basis for a lawsuit would be, because this is a private organization. This is what people forget about political parties, is that they have these primaries, but in some ways they're just for show.
Yeah.
They're not bound by them.
Right.
They can always just say, you know, the party's changed his mind.
But they do little things like, remember when the field of Republican candidates was a lot bigger and they had all the candidates sign a piece of paper saying, even when you're not our presumptive candidate, you'll still support it. Well, what do you do with that piece of paper, really? Is anybody going to take anybody to court because they've changed their mind and said, you know, I had time to think about it. I'm not going to do it.
It would be for show. You might be able to if there was some sort of condition. I'm not an expert in contract law. I know that was part of my introduction before, but it's actually not true. I regret that. I made you say that.
No, that's all right.
But I think that there might be a basis for a lawsuit based on some sort of a breach of contract or promise, but you can't. The political parties can do what they want, and that's what's going to be interesting in the next month. So.
Yep. Eric Zorn is here. Boy, is he feisty. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, it's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. He is crazy, too. Boy.
Greg?
Yeah, he's crazy. Eric Zorn is here. He's feisty.
With an
Everyone
F.
has an adjective.
Everybody I'm bitchy. Has an adjective.
Are you itchy?
I said bitchy.
Oh, I thought you said itchy. Neither of them are good.
Well, that's life.
I'll put away the baby powder then.
There's a couple of words, by the way, speaking of words, that you take issue with, Eric, and those words are?
Well, one word is corrupt. I feel like it's thrown around way too often to describe people you disagree with in politics. Bruce Rauner has been calling Madigan and Speaker Madigan and Senate President Cullerton corrupt. Donald Trump's been saying Hillary Clinton is corrupt.
Yeah.
And corruption is a crime. You know, it's it's not just a thing. I think it's not a word you just throw around and say, oh, he's been in politics for a long time. He's made a lot of deals. And it's interesting. I wrote this yesterday, and there was a Supreme Court decision just this morning where they overturned a corruption conviction for the Virginia governor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically because he had been involved in all these kind of shady deals. But the Supreme Court was saying, look, you know, you can't – you know, he was like – taking gifts from this guy, and he was setting up meetings for him and stuff. And the Supreme Court basically said, look, you know, this is what politicians do. They set up meetings, they do favors for people. And if you criminalize all that, if you make it a crime, then every politician is going to be at the mercy of prosecutors around the country. So I think corruption, to call somebody corrupt, I mean, you can say you don't like their views, you can say they're compromised, you can say they have conflicts of interest, but I think the word corrupt is thrown around way too much. The other phrase that I was on my high horse about was special interests. When you talk about, you know, the special interests are in Washington, and they're taking your rights away. And the other day, Governor Rauner was complaining he had a Juneteenth. But a week ago, we had a Juneteenth celebration, and it was that he had planned, and some protesters had threatened to disrupt it. So he said the special interests have gotten together and ruined my celebration. And I'm thinking, you know, what interest is there? It's not a special interest. I mean, people use this term to describe, basically they use it to describe organizations and people they disagree with. And your interests are noble interests, general interests.
Sure, of course.
And everybody else is a special interest. And the truth is that the clash of interests is really what democracy is all about. Like, you know, your interests, your
right,
you know, things that you believe in, and you do battle with the things that other people believe in. And you can't say, well, what I believe in, those are the good interests, and what other people believe in, those are the dreaded special interests.
Right, right, right.
So I'm urging people, and you know, that's, I'm on my campaign to get rid of certain words in politics. The other one that I don't like is reform. People always talk about reform. I'm going to reform these laws. We're going to do pension reform. And in the word reform, it suggests a change for the better.
Right.
But
that's so implied virtue of the
so
word itself.
So the word itself is argumentative.
Yeah.
It says, you know, they want workers' compensation reform. Well, they're going to make changes in the workers' compensation law. Are they going to propose them? But some people are going to say that's deform. That changes things for the worse. And it's fine for a politician to use it to say, well, I want this reform because the obvious suggestion is that you're going to make things better. You know, Pat Quinn, the reformer. But it's, I don't think it's at all fine for people who are writing the news and even analyzing the news to throw that word around just casually, like, oh, we need pension reform. Well, who's to say that your idea of a change is actually going to make things better? And the term itself suggests improvement. So
what about this one? Political outsider. It's become very much in vogue to claim that your candidate is a political outsider, meaning they're not part of the machine.
I mean, they don't know how things work very well.
Right. That's the downside of being a political outsider.
I mean,
right.
One of the problems that Governor Rauner's had, I think, is that he doesn't really know how politics works. Now, government and politics are all intertwined. And to get things done, you have to know how to work these deals. And it's not like being, you know, an equity investor like he is, who goes into companies and takes them over and says, this is how we're going to run things from now on, and, you know, my way or the highway. And so you bring people, I mean, politics is an art form in a way, and I'm not saying that everybody who has to be steeped in it forever, but the idea that you can come in from the outside, I mean, you guys must hear this all the time, people are like, oh, you just sit on the radio and talk all day? That must be really easy. I could do that. Well, actually, you probably couldn't do that. It's pretty hard to do a good radio show, right? And people say to me, oh, gosh, a column, I could do that. Like, well, yeah,
try it.
You could do a couple, maybe, yeah. But it would be... It's
not every day.
Yeah.
For 36 years.
So this idea that someone can just come in from the outside, like, oh, I have no experience in how, you know, in all the intricacies of government, how it all works, especially the presidency, you know, with all the foreign policy issues that you need to know about. And just, oh, I just use common sense to run this. I think it's
right.
Really crazy. Hey, speaking of common sense, look who's walked into the studio.
I don't know who that is.
Michael.
It's Steve Bertrand, your friend Steve.
My friend Steve.
He's got the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's what brings him here.
My
Eric.
Podcast mate, Steve Bertrand.
Thank you. We appreciate it. It's Eric Zorn, his triumphant return. You can read Eric in the Chicago Tribune anytime you want. We'll stick around. We'll find out what Steve has coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.